wasn't anything living. I was only a biro. No, I was going to say, I think there's something really pretentious about getting up to a microphone holding a laptop. I really do apologize. I just don't have any, I didn't think, I mean, tonight's great this night as far as I'm concerned, but I just happen to have my laptop, so someone says, you know, why not read a poem? So, well, it was snowing. Where we live, it was snowing the last couple of days, and so maybe that's what gave me the idea of reading a poem about snow. And this has a North American setting, and it's called, maybe some of you are jazz fans, I'm not sure. But if you are a jazz fan, you might know the piano player Bill Evans. And he wrote and performed a really beautiful piece, a waltz for Debbie. Anyway, I guess I was thinking about that when I wrote this poem, which is called Snowflakes and a Jazz Waltz. Now I'll just have to see whether I can control this thing. Snowflakes and a Jazz Waltz. You have things to do, but the snow doesn't care. As contemplation leads you from window to window, the snow accompanies you. Whenever you glance up from the page, there it is, layered, dense, constant. It amplifies the volume of space and gives you a way of telling time. Eradication of emptiness, a specific against ennui, it works like truth on a slant. Its lightness responds to gravity by drift and evasion. As you drive around town, it slackens and intensifies, a sideways sizzle of dashes and dots. While you circle the block, visualizing a parking place, listening on tape to the cymbal glide and diminished chords of a jazz waltz from 40 years ago when you were 20, a cash register rings through the booze and through the buzz and boozy hum of the village vanguard one Sunday afternoon through cocktail chatter and cigarette smoke exhaled by many people, many of whom must now be dead. Bill Evans is, Scott LaFaro is, killed in a car crash decades ago. But not you. You drive through the snow in the morning. Snow drifts and ticks. Bill Evans vamps, and Scott LaFaro's fingers slap against the strings of his stand-up bass in time with the Honda's windshield wipers and tires whirring over packed snow. It snows while you go out. It snows while you go into the bank and buy euros, and it's snowing when you come out again. Snowflakes, white constellations dissolving. Indelible snowflakes, printing the book of your hours. Thank you.
I apologize. It's not been very adventurous with trying to adjust the microphone. But I'm going to have to, because Paul is next. Our very own bard of the house. Paul Keith.
Thank you. It's great to be not here. I spent pretty much most of the last week writing this poem, so I haven't really had a chance to memorize it as I like to do if I can. It's a bit long anyway. But last year was really probably one of the best years of my life, I think about it. So much just happened for me last year. And over the last 4 weeks, that's just turned completely on its head, and I've found myself in a completely opposite reality, trying to struggle my way back to finding it. It's been kind of crazy, really. But it's really thanks to I'm very lucky. I've been blessed with some very good friends, and so this moment is really for them, for Lova and for my friends. And there's a quote from Othello where Iago is speaking to Othello, he's his chief, or one of his standard bearers. Good name in man and woman, dear my lord, is the immediate jewel of their souls. Who steals my purse, steals trash, is something, nothing, and has been slaves to thousands. But he who filches from me my good name, robs me of that which not enriches him, and makes me poor indeed. Good heaven, the souls of all my tribe descend from jealousy. This is called Install the Flames, and it's for love and for my friends. We don't have much, yet who will take our good name? Cause hurt to our only joy, so invisibly that no one blinks, blowing a silent spear into the heart of love's breath to extinguish the very air. I stand alive. The worst thing that can be done has been done, and we are alive after years of searching, healing, and nourishing solitude, a wisdom. As trust grew, we began to give completely. As trust grew, love found me and took me by the hand. Let's take a stroll on up to heaven, love said, and we stepped from cloud to cloud in the warm, endless flight of truth, light, beauty. Love is not a myth. She is here, holding my hand. Perhaps I had made the sky look different that day. But for whatever reason, some weeks or years later, I could not tell. On another perfect midwinter afternoon, two fighter jets reached up to the peaceful heights where we lay dreaming, and riddled us with bullets. Or were they the poisoned fire arrows of a pair of fallen Valkyries? Who knows? But there were two of them, and so many bullets. Bullets called envy, hate, spite, distrust, deceit, pride, and so many other smaller ones that seemed then to pass right through, like suspicion, infidelity, misfortune, jealousy, dispossession. Well, it is better to have loved, is it not? They're positive. Some say so. To have known love, and to have held her hand, and to have given her everything. Yes, it is better to have loved. The bullets hit love first. I was not on the right side of her to offer myself as a shield, as protection. And when I turned to catch her, she was already on fire. And there were distinctive bloody holes in her forehead, eyes, ears, and chest, swan neck, twisting around her fleeing spirit. I moved to catch and take hold of her, to cover and quell, but the flames had not gone, had looped around the busy, oblivious, cumulus clouds to discharge a full cartridge of hell's special mix into my back and skull. Pieces were blown from the physical into the metaphysical and back. I offered a gift to the people and the culture that I love, my tradition, a praise poem of sorts to my ancestors, who passed on the gifts of life with their speech. As I fell towards the earth, could see love struggling to stay up on the clouds, I realized I had wings. So I flew leaning, bleeding, back up and towards love, and still the planes would not go. Slow motion became everything. I had to see love's eyes then, and when she looked down towards me, the cloud we had shared had entered them, and she did not know me, and she saw something else, or right through me, and then trust, who had known me, and loved me, looked at me, took a smile, loaded it, and shot. And I saw love no more, for the bullets came and kept coming, until all I could see were the pieces of my heart scattered in the sky about me. There was a great and long darkness then, like the peaceful sleep of death, and yet I am here, alive. For love has known me, and one day she may return, and here she's going to make a full recovery. Once anger cools for the fragile strands of trust and courage to knit again in those clear, astounding steps of faith, one at a time. But I met a man who said he met love. And how could you do that, I asked.
Points. The first one is going to be without music, and the second one with a musical accompaniment. So you can just clap at the end, so it's going to clap between poems. Or, you can clap after the poem if you like, but please don't clap between, when I'm doing the musical accompaniment. Like when I play a tune, because the music is part of the poetry, so it's the clap would disturb when I do the two together. Okay, just clap after the first poem if you really want. Okay, well the first one is for is dedicated to Patrick Kavanagh. We did a lovely Patrick Kavanagh tribute last week. I'll just read it. He looked and saw and looked again, this tarnished world oblivious to him. He saw and looked and saw again, the sun-dappled, rain-splashed streets, not to him oblivious. We run and hurry about our streets and save our living for the indoor dimensions, while he sang sonnets to street benches. He found beauty in Dublin's grime, found God in city's chime. Flowing water brought forth a rhyme, and loneliness turned to flowing earthy wine. The second one I'll do with Paul in mind. This is a poem I wrote when after a tough day. I came back in the house I was living at the time. We'd no garden, but what we did have was a little courtyard, and there was loads of flowers kind of creeping in from the next garden, and it really cheered me up on that day. And I wrote this poem. Thank you. are coming to get us. Climbing over the wall, announcing their glory. Announcing that happiness is unavoidable, inevitable and unstoppable, and is coming to get you. You can try to avoid it, squirm your way into a depression, affect a huff or a puff, but it's coming to get you. Creeping in over those anxious, barren walls, winking at you all day in the spring sky. The glory of God, they call it. I call it joy. Call it what you like. They're going to take over and fill you with joy. Sorry to be the bearer of such bad news. But those walls you've built will crumble in a haze of fresh tears. And the breeze is going to kiss your naked lips tomorrow. You will be seduced by an orgasm of green grass, those succulent tears of the sky. Little drops of heaven will kiss you on the nose, run down your spine, while the wind will touch you in those forgotten places, while the sun will pour deep into your soul and smile, because the flowers are going to get you. The flowers are going to get you. The flowers are going to get you, boy.
Flora and sweating fauna of the creeping carbon jungle. Exciting trams were closed as we breathed in the fumes of the hushed hysteria. Safe behind those last cases, the big game studied our weapons calmly. Thank you, Megan. Next up we have Niall Harriet.
Called Reflections on the Tower. It's a prose poem to try and make sense of an elusive shadow. As an ancient sage explained, that which lets now the dark and now the light appear is Tao, the way. When we start to see this pattern, life is less of a struggle. Everything repeats in cycles. What goes round comes round, and what we give out comes back to us. These annoying little cliches, from an ancient age of clarity, linger on uneasily in our fast modern culture of grab what you can while you can. The original meaning of yang, the funny side of the hill, and then it became, guess who was boss, the male principle. The original meaning of yin, the shady side of the hill, and then it became, those shady ladies, the female principle. Through sympathetic magic, the ancients were seeking balance in nature and their lives. The Tao is an antique symbol of deep cyclic symmetry, dynamic cosmic harmony. The dark of the yin is hidden, right brain, intuitive, receptive, with the light seed of its opposite within the yin. The light of the yang is outgoing, left brain, rational, driving, with the dark seed of its opposite within the yang. Tao symbol portrays the complex cycle of changes down through the ages, through the lives of each one of us, and through every incarnation, with times as shades between.
Thank you very much. Next up we have Sheila Turrington.
Deliberately changed, like renowned, UNED, and pros and cons, the OSC, so on. It's called Open Mic. I thought I saw you once behind the hayloft door before the Christmas break. Some Monday night drop in just after 8 o'clock, while some may read a piece and others sing a song. Some more just lend an ear, they like to stand around. There's always ample room below the horse's head. The muse may breathe a word, the McNamara slam, renowned both far and wide, and then the guest comes on. So hot if you don't write, come meet our famed MC. Each name is on his sheet. I feel you're not too sure. Survey the pros and cons. I know, but what the heck? The crowd is on your side. Do I come here a lot? You bet, indeed I do. No rush, just take your time. When asked if you're all set, you could reply, I am. Mooring. A sheet of stone, grey as a battleship's rudder, greets him from a transom of rock, like a vessel beached in the shingle floor. High on the trailing edge, a mooring hole gapes, polished in olden times by painter of hemp from longboat or cutter of windship or steamer. Early endeavours close by to pierce the flint-like facade, wisdom won through, leave well alone. Overarching, storm-felled, an undead tree lies athwart the coast treasure, to veil it from coastal erosion or moral attrition, blood of high and mighty pontoons. In waves of heat, bees mumble around a quilt of pink blossoms on a cowering branch, yet to defy the wallop of wind, the grape shot of spray. Wild growth keep this pearl unreachable from land. Next to the shallows, his docile canoe still waits on her blade's double bite. Thank you.
Okay, these two readers left, and it's the magic that always happens where we have just enough time. So the next reader is Paul O'Malley.
Hello. Can I begin with just a quick response to Grace? She used the phrase, my struggle to become a writer. And in response to that, I offer this. If I hadn't become a writer, what would have happened to me? Who would I have been? How lost would I have remained? Okay, this is the poem called Every Man, the Priest Accused. It's longish. I am a man of the cloth, a follower of Jesus Christ. I walk in his footsteps, clean the feet of his disciples. I am his sinner with secret ways. Sinner ways haunt the path I trod in his name. I am a man of the cloth, black cloth and ashes. I have set fire to the dreams of children, robbed their innocence, raked and buggered my way from parish to parish. I am a man of the roads, from Cloyne to Comiskey's patch. I know the bishops, they know me. Some of them have sent me on, others have taken me in, a wanderer in search of childhood. I'm one who lost a youth to drink and a father's vices. Faith of my father standing still. I tell you I was sinned against a wall and made to pay for the pain of intimacy, for the price of a decent hug. I am he who am the power and the glory of my community. Proud as I prostrated before the altar, ordained priest, given authority to turn flesh and blood to water and wine. Survivor of generations of defrocked youth. Mine were the hands that held the buttocks of altar boys. I know my disgrace now. I have always known it, before ever there was a public word of protest. I lived in the shame of what was done to me in the name of Christ. We were a family of the rosary, the chalice, and extreme unction. You judge me now. I have been judged since the day I was conceived. Complain now, I've been complaining since the day I knew my soul stunted. I've done my best to be a good boy and gain the sweet taste of human warmth. I'll take the warmth wherever I can squeeze it out. You have no idea of the pain that tore my flesh apart. I was crucified alongside him. I too had vinegar speared into my behind. Let me leave you this. If you are sinned against, so am I. We are blood brothers in anguish. Pick up that stone and throw it into my eye. I have need of pain to remind me I still live. There is no end to the cycle of such bloody feasts. I still genuflect. I still say stations of the cross. I see no end to this until the last day comes and I am reunited with sinners on the cross of Calvary. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now we have a very special gift from Ellen to be dedicated to Paul, I believe. And enjoy.
A very short poem about that. It's a sonnet. I like sonnets as they are, and it's about food. Not really fond about food, but there you are. Some people are foodies. This is called the foodie sonnet. Ah, yes, it's true. I like my food, everything, just like you, more or less. Just plain potatoes, or dressed as chips, also, or mashed, or mangled, mungled, messed about, messed with the worst of mushy sprouts. I like a literary meal as well, some of Proust's soft biggies dipped in tea, and for to bind up the inside of my innards, a scrumptious plate of Bloom's best nutty gizzards, designed to make the most ungustsome take a sickie. There's better stuff out there that I have not yet then tried. Farmed baby whale, garnished with a sliver of barn owl, toothsome slices of spitted roast gorilla in a silver bowl, or human flesh itself, young, tender, baked or lightly fried. But best of all, if you really want to go the whole damn hog, is a rounded plate of spangled, free-range, marinated puppy dog. You could do anything with a sonnet. As we all know, at the end of every night, Paul recites a wonderful, passionate poem about poetry. It's a great performance, and we never tire of hearing it. And I decided, it was Bram Stoker said that he got the vision for Dracula after he had a bad taste of oysters, or a bad meal of oysters. I composed it after having too many free-range marinated puppy dogs. So it's called The Curdled Mouth, which is in honor of Paul. This bad taste in my mouth, this sludge of knee-like stodge, this kinky color of vernacular delight, this cream puff of pauper poetry, this vapid vortex mix of spirits and booze and lack wits. And even if revolving vampires sleep over on hens and ducks and geese and lanes of cranes of feathered contradiction and with ravenous breasts expired on our dreaming predilections. And even as preening Moses, a still snot-green unseasoned Moses, leaves his purple tail dripping on bonking sheets for a new bar-fest of misery, and in the evening a star-fed poet sucks from the haunting handcuffs of turtle dough wine, other slam-dunk poet wits, their curses deafened descend, curdling their healing bits.